Welcome, travelers. I'm Josh.
I'm Glenn.
And I'm Lee Wanika, and this is Tabletop Journeys, where we will be your not-so-humble guides on the quest for RPG adventures.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we are all devoted role players and storytellers at heart, and we absolutely love sharing our passion with you. On our show, we feature diverse tabletop RPG systems, demonstrating them through actual plays and breaking down the rules to provide you with tips, tools, and techniques to help you navigate them. We also love bringing the content creators behind these games into the studio to give you a peek behind the curtain with relevant and insightful interviews.
Let us help you get the most out of your story, no matter what game world or system you're playing, because detailed settings, heroic characters, diverse NPCs, and a focus on story over rules can make any campaign legendary. Now, here's a message from friends of the show.
Have you been looking for a break from the drudgery of the real world? What if the future wasn't so bleak? What if someone was to save us all? How would that look?
I must know, does your microwave gun go ding when it's done shooting?
Well, you're in luck, because Cybertopia is a rules-light TTRPG actual play that explores just such a reality.
We've got this disco ball, which is pretty cool. We've got these two drones flying around in here, dodging me out of the smoke.
Check us out on your podcast app of choice, and here are a rolling cast of 16 fantastic players take on weird and wild missions that the corporate overlords need taken care of for totally altruistic and benevolent reasons.
Okay, this time it's serious. I would like to turn my hacking hat backwards.
Welcome, everybody, to tonight's episode of Tabletop Journeys. Very excited to be speaking with you once again today, and very excited to be sitting across the microphone from my two illustrious, one illuminated, one in the dark co-hosts, Mr. Lee Winnie
Kimmerer. Hiroshiro is the artistic term for light
yes,
and
exactly.
darkness.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Light and darkness. It's like I'm reading Mad Magazine over here. It's very strange. But Mr. Lee Winnie Kimmerer, Mr. Glenn Myers, gentlemen, how the heck are you this evening?
I'm doing great, and I'm going to resist the urge to sing Billy Squier's In the Dark right now for Glenn, but it's a tough...
Are you, though?
In the dark. Yeah, no, I will. Not. I'll stop right there. I'm doing quite well. It's been an exciting kind of weekend for Tabletop Journeys and my part of Tabletop Journeys. I'm starting a new bit that's going to come in about a month to add to what we do for our actual plays, Star Trek Preservations. More on that to follow. I've been working on some other Tabletop Journeys projects and things that folks will be seeing in the coming months as well. So I'm really excited about all of that, but really just deep in the character and NPC construction bit over the weekend as well, reviewing and studying up on some things and looking forward to what comes for our Star Trek game, our other games. We've locked in some really cool interviews that are coming up, and I'm really excited about everything we're doing these days.
Yeah. I agree. We have some really cool stuff on the horizon from some new and old voices on the show before. So yeah, excellent. How about you, Glenn? So let's open up our favorite game on our Friday episodes. Where is Glenn this evening? In the dark of your car.
I am still in Carrollton, Virginia. We'll be in the same spot for the rest of the month, right at the very end of the month. It's been a wonderful week down here in Virginia. It's been like 70s with a side of frozen breeze, mind you.
I don't want to hear about your side of frozen breeze while Maine tried to once again explode itself.
I know, that's wild. You got 20 inches of freaking snow. That's insane.
Okay,
bro,
this is crazy. And I'm sorry, Glenn, I don't mean to cut you off.
That's okay, Anton. Let's talk about the snowstorm.
Within a two-week period, not so much where we currently are, but at our previous house, within 2 weeks of each other, we had a storm that dumped 26 inches of snow and then another storm that dumped another 2 feet of snow. And then this week, it has been in the 60s. Now, when you get 4 feet of snow in this time of year, it's because warm water comes up from the Gulf, hits cold air coming from Canada. Thanks, Canada.
And we had a green screen behind you to be gesturing at.
Yeah,
Blame Canada.
Dumps a gigantic bunch of stuff. And then when it is all of a sudden 60 degrees, all of that water's got to go somewhere. And I will tell you where that water went. Into the swamp that is now the backyard at that house. This last blizzard was a for real. The first one was for real for a lot of folks. This one was for really real for a lot of folks. We were out of power here for two and a half days. Yeah. And luckily it was warm. So like the fireplace was keeping the house around 55 degrees or so. So it wasn't too chilly inside, but yeah, it's when you lose power for 2.5 days, it is
what they
call a real pain in the ass. Yeah, exactly. Put a crimp on our recording schedule for sure. And we still have a 20-foot long, 8-inch wide limb that fell off of a 100-foot pine tree that's casually resting on our power wires, which apparently Central Maine Power does not seem that concerned about. That would seem to be a concern that you would want addressed. At least it didn't
come through your living room.
Exactly. At the end of the day,
all could have been worse.
It all could have been worse. We made it through with virtually no damage to any property or people or anything like that. We were very lucky. We were inconvenienced, but other than that, we made it through just fine. Lots of other folks were not so lucky. We were definitely counting our blessings. But
right. And you were even back up and running in time to record with me last night.
I was, yes. So what did we record last night, Glenn?
For my bit of news, what I've been working on my end of Tabletop Journeys that's been super exciting is setting up a playtest that we're going to run an AP of Daggerheart.
Yes.
My Critical Role, Darrington Press, that's been out for a little while now. And they just dropped the next update. Like I got the email today, just so you know, I haven't reviewed those rules. So we have our session zero on Thursday where we're going to do a small scene. And that's the only scene we'll have based on the first set of rules. But then our very first full session, we'll be working on the second set of playtest rules. But we'll have our own Josh from Tabletop Journeys. And we'll have Ari from the Rainbow Dice Club and Mike from 19 Hits the Dragon. Running as players while I gleefully throw scenarios at them and test out this new system and see what we think of it.
I am very excited. For one, I'm very excited to be throwing dice again with Mike and Ari because it has been way too long since I've thrown dice with either one of them. But I'm also really excited to be sitting on this side of the microphone. That's not something that I get to sit behind very often. So I'm excited to go ahead and be sitting at your table, Glenn. I'm just excited to be playing. I want to play more. So
that's, yeah, me too. I'm super excited too.
No, not at all. As the member of the team whose schedule would not allow for this particular game to occur, I'm very excited to be able to watch it come to fruition. Jealously looking at our editors, Marty and Dave, whichever of the two will end up editing that episode, wishing that I might be a better, stronger part of editing that episode because I really want to see it happen and go. I'm really looking forward to the character stuff and piecing together all the different elements and that. And my understanding, Glenn, is you're actually going to do some of the editing there as well. And I'm just jealous. I can't wait to be able to just as an audience member to watch it happen because I know the caliber of GM you are, Glenn. I know the caliber of players that Josh is and Mike is and Ari is, having sat down at game tables with them, virtual game tables with them on a couple different occasions. I cannot wait to see the types of characters and the types of hijinks and adventures and drama y'all get up to. Really excited for it.
Spoiler alert, because I haven't talked to you about this yet, but I had this theory the other day that even though your schedule doesn't allow it all the time, if at some point once we're rolling, you've got a time where we're recording that you know will work for you, I could probably create a role for an evening for you to be guesting in there and sit down at the table with everybody.
Make that happen.
we just got to figure out which one it's going to be.
Just can't stop the press. Maybe. Make that happen.
Maybe you'll be party friend. Maybe you'll be party foe. Who knows? But I can come up with something to do with you.
Yep.
Town guard that harasses him.
I feel I can be Mr.
McGee chasing down David Banner. Yes. That'd be awesome.
Or you could play like a Mr. Magoo style NPC that just like bumbles through the scene.
See exactly.
We could totally hook you up with a turnip cart.
Make the cabbage guy. I love it. That's fantastic. Yeah.
You could just give me the scene. Yeah. I'll just record it separately, and you just fit it in where it needs to go. That'll be awesome.
Yeah. I was very pumped last night when we did the character generation bit last night. Glenn gave me some very interesting questions to go ahead and ponder on and think about. So I think, with like the world building and everything like that, the bit about who have you lost that was most important to you thing, like that whole bit about how because I'm playing and how each clank picks up some of the characteristics of the personality of their maker, a la Data from Star Trek, who he was basically taken from the model of Noonien Soon and all that. I think it's just going to be hot.
Love the perspective, the perspective you're bringing to your clank. My favorite part of last night was when I was asking you to give me a childhood or formative years, because your clank's not that old. And the way that you associated the word friend for your clank and versus his purpose and everything else. I'm not going to spoil it for everybody. I did record those, and I'm hoping to cobble together like an intro episode. So maybe I can pull that in there. I love the perspective you're bringing up.
Yeah. And I do love how, like, in the moment I came up with what he calls everybody that is not also a clank. And that's, he refers to them as bloodborne. So just, we are distinctly different and we are not the same. Like that kind of mentality to it. Really super excited. Can't wait. And really, again, excited. Mike, Ari, I hope that you're listening. Really excited to be playing with you again. I think Thursday is going to be a lot of fun. So.
Off the chain.
All right, let's we could talk about Daggerheart all night long, but let's not. Let's talk about something else tonight. And this is going to be one of those episodes for our Storyteller's Toolbox, right? Where we're going to be getting into something that every storyteller runs into at some point, and there can be a variety of reasons why it happens. But every kind of storyteller gets to that point, and players, I'm sure, also get to that point where it's like, we all feel like our campaign needs a little bit of revitalization. It needs a little kick in the pants to go ahead and get back on track, get moving forward. And so that kind of rule zero is being adhered to, where everyone's having fun. And so we're gonna take our normal tabletop model here. We're gonna break out our fan roll dice and talk about some ways that we've tried and some things that we've done to kick that back onto the track here. So
get it back on the rails.
All right, gentlemen. Then fan roll dice to the ready. Let's see who gets to go first in round one here. So.
Big money, no whammies. 8.
Oh, come on. Stay on the table. That's a 15 for me.
And I'm rocking it first with number 18.
Excellent. All right, sir.
So the dice do not fail me, and I'm going to jump right into it. Like Josh said, every campaign goes through the paces, and at some point, you'd start to get that feeling that maybe this isn't going the right way. There's a couple givens that I like to throw out at this point. This is given the fact that, generally speaking, you and your table want to keep playing, but there are things that feel like this is dragging down. So the first thing that I lean on, and I didn't really have a great term for it until actually maybe a couple months ago, but it is something that I've done more than one occasion over the years, is a session re-zero. Now, the term re-zero, I'm stealing from the Dungeon Dudes. They had an episode about that, and that's what they called it. And I loved that title. So all credit where credit is due. I'm using their term. But oddly, I have already done this. And for those who are fans of Star Trek Preservations, they've seen this. At the end of season one, we did a series of episodes, little one-on-ones with each of the cast members, where we literally talked about their character, what their character meant to them, their character's journey throughout season one, and the things they were looking forward to in season two. I effectively spread out that session re-zero into 5 separate episodes with each of our cast members, and including a session zero with our newest cast member. And even with Josh and I, we did a little self-interview, me with him with me, to go ahead and reset our calibration on the campaign. And this was not an issue of our campaign flagging. We were at an exciting point. Things were going very well. But to keep that energy, to keep that interest, to keep that drive, especially knowing that we had a 2-month break between one game and the next, this was the way we did it. And it was, like I said, it was talk about your character for a little bit. Tell me what your character did last season. And I was listening and taking notes on what people told me. That told me what was important to them. I asked some key questions. What was your favorite NPC that you interacted with? One of the things that you are looking forward to your character doing or going through in the next season that will interest you. Who are the NPCs you're looking forward to interacting with? And I took notes on all of those things. Fans of the show, if they've listened to the first three episodes of Star Trek Preservations, you'll notice every episode so far has included pieces of the things we talked about in that session ReZero with our players. I cannot stress enough how wonderful that is for revitalizing a campaign. You don't have to let your campaign get bad before you make the choice to revitalize. And Assassin ReZero is the perfect way to do that.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Where recalibrating is a really good way to solidify where everybody wants to go. Episode 4 of Preservations is going to be directly pulled from one of the interviews that you had with the cast members verbatim. That entire plot line emerged because of something that they wanted to do. And it has sprinkled itself into the first three episodes of the season. So that's a really great way to recalibrate the table, reset everything, set everybody's expectations, set your own expectations as the storyteller. Yeah, it's great.
I agree. Words like recalibrate and reset and realign are going to come up a lot tonight because that's basically what we're talking about. Yeah, some of it is going to be similar. So a whole lot of it is going to have to do with capitalizing on exactly what you're talking about, which is going to your players and their interests to help you figure out where you need to go next. Because if you don't have their interest, that's what makes a campaign flag. Or alternately, it could be that they all love what they're doing, but you didn't sign up to just shepherd a bunch of murder hobos around from town to town. Regardless, that realignment, that resettlement, it's all going to involve conversation.
And that is exactly where I was going to go, Glenn, is that...
Glad I could segue for you.
So I think that at any point when a storyteller feels like it is, and I know that you said, Luinica, that you don't have to wait until your campaign is starting to drag or starting to not feel great for everybody at the table. You don't have to wait to that point. However, if it is at that point, my biggest suggestion is going to be everybody needs to converse out of game about what it is that's going on. Don't be afraid to go ahead and talk about, hey, you guys are murder hoboing. And there's got to be a better phrase for that, honestly, too. We should think about that.
You're absolutely right. We should come up with a better phrase for it. Because most parties aren't truly murder hobos. That is the extreme stereotype.
Yeah. But maybe that's the way that they're playing through the game. They're playing through the game without any sense of subtlety, any sense of diplomacy, any sense of anything like that, and really just speaking with their swords, which if that's the game that they want to play, you've got to make sure that's the game you're running. Because if you're trying to run a different game, that's going to be frustrating for them and for you.
And so, it's got to be the game you want to run.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that really is like my suggestion here for this first round here is that the session ReZero is a fantastic one, Luinica. My suggestion is talk to your players. Converse with them about what does everybody want. Now that we've been playing together for 6 months and we all understand what everyone's game style is like and you understand what my storytelling style is like, what sort of game do we want? And so maybe the addition onto my suggestion here is not only converse with your players, recalibrate, everything like that. But it's also play for a little while before you decide the big multi-year campaign that you want to run. See what everybody does and then make decisions. Don't jump right into, okay, we're gonna run a multi-year campaign. I don't know what all of you guys want to do. I don't know what kind of play style you're going to be bringing to the table, but we're going to jump right into some 20-session campaign starting now. We're going to run the Wild Beyond the Witchlight starting right now, and it's going to carry us from level 1 to level 20. It may not. Like, that's not something that you necessarily want to make that decision right on game one. And I think that taking a little bit of time, taking 5 or 6 sessions, get to know what everybody's doing, and then make decisions about where the campaign is going to start and where the campaign is going to go is the right way to go ahead and go about it. Get the campaign off on the right foot.
Right. And that's that whole redirect, get it back on track thing. It's re-session zero, but it's also, dude, you got to make sure you did a good session zero in the front. You need to make sure that everybody signed up to play the same kind of game. if you miss that step, it may not be a new session zero, two, or re-session zero. It could just be, hey, let's do a late session zero where you get everybody together and chat. Yep. But it could look like whatever you want it to look. I agree 100%, Josh. It could be, they could be one-on-one. You could all get together. And it's tough, but don't be afraid to be the storyteller who says, look, guys, I know you are having a whole lot of fun with the freedom that this world provides you. And I'm trying really hard to come up with plot that will intrigue you and interest you that you want to follow. Looking for any guidance you've got for me, but I am looking for more to the game than just hack and slash. If that's what you need, there's nothing wrong with saying that to your players. Still provide them with what they want. Let them stab a bunch of baddies. But talk to them about the fact that you need a little bit more from the story, too, and see what they think. It's tough to actually have those conversations. But once you get them going, they're not really as bad as they seem like they're going to be when they're floating around in your brain.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Conversation is everything. That's why we do a session zero. That's why I recommend a session re-zero. And all along, you need to keep having open conversations with your players. If you as a GM recognize somebody fading from attention or starting to not show often, have those conversations. What's going on? What can we do? Can we schedule? There's some other things there, but asking those questions, having those conversations has a lot to do with the ability to be successful in revitalizing campaigns, re-energizing your players, re-energizing yourself, aligning your wants, desires, needs, style with your players' wants, needs, desires, and style. Doesn't happen if you don't have good conversations.
All right, Mr. Myers, what have you got for us? What tips? Right.
I'm going to open my get the campaign back on the tracks option with the backstory combination redirect. That's what I'm going to call it. Backstory combo redirect. So let's say you've been running your campaign for a little while now, and it's been fun. You started out, like Josh was saying, where you're going to play a few sessions and you're going to see where it goes. And then you're trying to build plot from there and everybody's having a good time. But because you didn't start with that big epic plan in your brain, you don't know where you're going next. And you find yourself having trouble figuring out where to go. Or you're working on trying to get everybody going in a specific direction, but they still haven't been able to completely buy into your plot, right? So one of the things you can do at that point, when you realize that your main plot line isn't quite doing it for your players or isn't quite doing it for you, if you're like, man, I need a minute. I need some time to really think about this, to sort it out. What you can do, and I've used this tactic before on more than one occasion, especially if you've got players who give you good backstory, but you can mine that for the things that you know the players are interested in. They designed the character to be interested in X, Y, and Z, right? So you go and you look at the other people in the party and come up with a short-term, fun-styled plot line or angsty style, depending on your game style, plot line that's going to involve multiple people's backstories, tie in as many characters as you can, that's deviant from your current plot line. You're going to plan a backstory invested side quest. Okay. And plan it to run a couple of sessions. Make it be where they have to get all the way home to their lost childhood home to discover the thing, and there's travel time, and it's going to take up maybe four or five sessions, even three sessions, whatever you think you need. But while that's running, you can be working on the redirect for your main plot when they return to it. You can be working on coming up with some better connections, paying attention to what they're doing in this subplot, because that will still inform your decisions for the other campaign as well. You can still get a sense of what they're looking for and what they're interested in and start redeveloping that main piece. And feel free to ask them a little bit too. Be honest if you want to and just say, hey, I'm reworking some of the main plot while we're working on this. Do you guys have any suggestions? But set that up. Or if you don't want to do a full subplot within the game, run a 3 or 4 session window to do some replanning, to do some rethinking, and to draw some new connections to try to bring your players back in would be my first suggestion on getting back on the rails.
Oh, man. That is such a great suggestion, Glenn. Like, every storyteller has been there where they have spent years crafting this game world, and they can't wait to go ahead and take players and drop them into the middle of it and then just see what happens. And there's this internal clock that the storyteller has about all these things that are happening. And the thing that they forgot to create this entire time was a campaign, adventures, and encounters. They just invented a world. I'm so guilty of that. Like, the last campaign, it died on the vine because it was like, it was tough to run because I had to go ahead and figure out, I needed to plan for every possible thing that could go on. It was hard to follow. I'm not sure that they ever really picked up what was being laid down about what was going on and everything like that, because I just didn't have a cohesive campaign. I just, every month, was, oh, you're here now? Here's what's happening. Oh, it's going to push you to this other part of the world. Here's what's happening over here. It was analysis paralysis over information. There was no cohesive thread for them to go ahead and follow. And so it really taught me a lot about trying to do that.
Yeah, too many choices can overwhelm a party just as much as not having any.
Exactly.
It's like a fine line. Everybody likes the sandbox concept, but it's a fine line in that sand fun side before you cross over into the litter box side.
Yeah. Even Skyrim had a plot.
Right.
I love everything you're saying there, because like both of you have intimated, it's very simple. When you put all that effort into building this whole thing, and I'm notorious for it myself, if you build it to the minutest detail, there's no room for players to put their stamp on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you wind up in that situation, your players can wind up getting a little bit revolty. Next thing you know, you got somebody on a raft, paddling away from the island. It happens to all of us sometimes.
Yep. We've all been there. But speaking about being on kind of both sides of this equation and the need to revitalize a campaign, and that little vignette and the campaign world it comes from, it brings me to my next thing. But we're going to go into our roles to determine.
Well, yeah, I was going to say exactly. Yeah. Let's not jump the gun here. We're going to step away for a quick commercial break here, and then we will be back with round number 2.
Here at Tabletop Journeys, we've leveled up our game and we're prepared to make your next roll legendary. We've just started a partnership with FanRoll Dice, and they have over 300 product options to choose from. Gemstone, metal, new liquid core dice, and so much more. Better yet, listeners to the Tabletop Journeys podcast can get 10% off on their orders when they follow the link below and use discount code PODCAST10. A portion of these purchases come back to us, and this is a great way for you to help support the show.
We are back, gentlemen. So FanRoll Dice to the ready. Let's see if Liwanika gets to go ahead and have to go first again, or if someone potentially snakes him.
So, oh, I just can't take the pressure. It's so exciting.
That's a 10 for me, so I am not likely to go ahead and then
steal. I'm rolling my lucky number 13 right now.
Okay. What about you, Glenn?
And I have a 16.
16. Glenn goes first. I will carry the anchor leg, which is good because like I told Glenn during our break there, I am ready to go off the rails and a little wild and crazy this round. Going last, I think, will suit me well. So, Mr. Myers,
take it away.
The floor is yours.
So for my next one, all right, I'm going to go ahead and put it in here, even though it might be the best left for a wrap-up. The question on the table is ways to revitalize a campaign, regardless of what's making it flag or it's just not generating enough interest. This may be a less popular opinion, but after talking to everybody, because I do believe in all of the talking to everybody's first, like we've been talking about, you need to do what you can to see if your players want to get on board with anything in particular for a plot direction, or if there's feedback you need to take from them to bring to the campaign. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with asking the question, should we revitalize this campaign? And I don't know if this is cheating by getting off topic a little bit, but I think it's an important question to ask. Because as the storyteller, a lot of the onus for trying to create this change appears to be on you. It's not. It's a lot on the players as well, because their decisions and their choices directly impact everything about what you're trying to do for them. But if y'all aren't all on the same page and things aren't vibing and it's not any fun, I don't think you should be afraid of asking the question, can we take what we're currently doing and make it fun again the way that we want to? Or should we take a step back and be like, all right, we were aiming for the Lord of the Rings and what we got was Robin Hood men in tights. We went wrong somewhere. Should we try to reel this back into somewhere in the middle? Or would you guys like to completely relaunch into a comic campaign since that seems to be what we're vibing on? There's nothing wrong with that, because if they want comedy slapstick but and you're after high drama, the table's never going to align. And that's not saying that you should just walk away from your game or anything like that. It's still all about talking to your players and deciding what the best path forward is for the group, because not every group is going to be ideal for every game. We talked about in our Dragonheart review and some of the stuff that came up about Powered by the Apocalypse and the way that Dragonheart wrote some of the player guidance. I mentioned in that episode that a large part of what can cause a campaign to flag is that some of our more complicated games teach players to be strategists more than role players, right?
Yep.
So you can go the other way too. You can go away from the slapstick men in tights and all the way to now we're doing Master and Commander, where we're trying to analyze every, actually that was a really good movie that doesn't quite fit this analogy, but it sounds good.
It was a really good movie, but it would not necessarily be a good role-playing game. So
correct. Absolutely. But yeah, you're getting to that level of nitty gritty. Not everybody's going to have fun with that. Yeah. The albatross scene where the doctor gets shot is really cool, but not everybody's looking for that level of grit. And if you can't find that happy medium, there is nothing wrong with saying, let's pump the brakes, roll up some new tunes, and try something different.
Yep.
When you say that, Glenn, what it calls to my mind is this basic fact. We're talking about how to revitalize a campaign. But at the core of what we're talking about, the core of the conversations that were brought up in our round one and what we're starting on in round two is not revitalizing a campaign.
I like where you're
headed. It's not finding a way to make a game better. It's revitalizing the interest of people. And specifically about revitalizing the people at our table.
The table,
it's exactly. Saving the group. Sometimes to save the group, you got to kill the campaign. And don't ever feel bad, whether you're a player or a game master, about making that decision. You're the game master. That's not the game for your group. Don't sweat it. Play the game that's good for your group as a whole. Run the game that you were planning on running or the style of game you're planning on running at a convention somewhere where folks can come and do that, or at your local shop with other folks. You can have more than one game group. You can have a game group that wants to Monty Hall their way through adventures. You can have a game group that really wants to do Tyranny of Dragons or box adventures. You can have a group that wants to do the Men in Tights, or better yet, the Princess Bride. I've played in all of those groups and had amazing times. I've run all of those types of games as well. The
Absolutely.
Fact is, you got to find who works for what games, and it's perfectly okay to spread yourself out and find the group for each style, and that's okay. So I love where your head's at. Like I said, we're talking about revitalizing campaigns, but at the core, we're talking about saving a group. We're talking about re-energizing a game group. And having Absolutely. Fun at the table.
Right. And I'm sure that a lot of you folks out there listening have had the same problem that I know all three of us had, where you get together with a group, things go amazing for a few sessions, but then something causes it to implode.
Yep.
It's better to try something new than to let that happen and lose the game group. And the next thing you know, you don't have that regular game anymore to play, and you're back to looking for a DM again or looking for players. And you got to be, don't be afraid to make the big moves.
Yep.
Absolutely. Because I like to move it. I like to.
I was saying more that you were like a 250-pound running back who separated my shoulder with your noggin. That was a big move. That was a big move.
Yeah. I want to go back to Palladium Gaming. That's where Glenn and I had amazing times. A lot of the stuff we talk about on the show, both good and for ill, happened while playing Palladium Games. So I really want to go to something that Glenn did amazingly well. This way to revitalize a campaign really comes down to give them a home. Quite literally, give your game group a base of operations. Give them their own Batcave, their own Fortress of Solitude, their own Hall of Justice. Give them a location that they can command and control. Let them build it, or let them clear it, let them secure it, let them manage it to some extent. Whether or not it is an issue of the players just engaging in all these different ways, but if you've got a group that seems to want more combat, then make it, hey, here's the base of operations. You've been bequeathed this. Your team has to go clear it. Now you've got several sessions of clearing this location so you have a base of operations. They wanted that. Now they can engage in it because it's giving them a really nice goal. Maybe it was social interaction. Now the goal is you have to go get it. You have to secure that by making deals with all the right factions or all the right lords and knights and nobles. Maybe it's about exploration. Go out there and see what's in that section of land, that unclaimed territory, and make it safe for our flag. And they go out and conquer this land and build a base of operations for their home kingdom. You can use a base of operations for any, all, or some mix of the three pillars that fall into a typical Dungeons and Dragons game or any other game. If you're playing Star Trek, it's go build a space station. Looking at you, Preservations. If you're playing any number of games, there's always a way to go give them a spot. And by the way, it's a great way to make that transition in that higher end of tier two into that tier three. Now you're in control of something. You've given them a location to protect. There are probably NPCs or civilians now that they have to protect. You're looking for a way to give them those level of responsibilities, give those players those responsibilities that kind of tie them to the world. A base of operations is a great way to do it. And I, for one, am all for it. Glenn did that in our Palladium game. Like I said, we were excited for the game, but when I, as a player, once we knew this was the spot where we were going to be, went off. I was nuts about that place. One of the finest parts of that role-playing experience was working on building, defending, and building up that base of operations for our group. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And I think it's a great way to revitalize campaigns.
And honestly, I got a lot of the ability to do what I did with that from you guys and that, from my players in that, because of their buy-in, because of how into this base, the secret base that they discovered and took over was. And everybody wanted to know if they had their own room, what the room looked like. Wolfgang's character took over the hangar for a brewing spot, and he was brewing all kinds of craziness. But the absolute best plot fodder you guys ever gifted me with that base was choosing it in the first place, because you chose to take over the enemy's stronghold. The enemy still existed. You just took over this stronghold. So you made your base out of a place where the bad guys would always know exactly where you were, already knew the layout. So it was very easy to continue to just poke the bear while you lived there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that actually, thank you for bringing up that example, Glenn, because that actually goes exactly to the point that I was going to make, is that when we talked about the Bastion's UA a few months ago, one of the things that we talked about with that specific UA is that when it comes around for the players is too late. It's at a point when the players should be ranging far from home and doing grandiose things and everything like that. And so, like, having to go ahead and maintain a base of operations 1,000 miles away from where the action is, if you're in the Underdark and your campaign and your castle is up on the mainland, you're SOL. Or if you're in Spelljammer, good luck, like, where that kind of thing. And so I think your point is an important one, Glenn, where it's not just about building the base and giving the base to the players. It's about integrating the base into the game plot. It's about making the base a character in the game. You mentioned Starbase Aslan. Starbase Aslan is a character in the game as much as the Delamis Christian is, as much as the Michael Collins is, as much as the Natalie Panic is. Like, all of these ships are characters in the game, and that's what makes them important. Not the fact that the players have them, because the players have 17 dispensable shuttles on the Delamis Christian too. They are not important in the game. They are a mode of operation, and they're a nice tool for them to go ahead and use, and it gives them a little bit of drama to go ahead and decide which one they're going to pick for a particular thing. it's making them an important character that helps. That's why that tactic is effective. A good tactic, but you got to make sure to go ahead and do it. Got to make sure to build it into the game. Don't just build it for the players, but build it into the world.
And that's what's part of what that's part of what's going to help you generate buy-in from your players.
Exactly.
And into that base. Yep. They can, and it lets them get all upset and worried when the bad guys open a portal directly into it and start flooding it with troops because now they're defending their home.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it doesn't do you any good to make the base the place that you left behind on your trek to the Land of Oz. It wouldn't help you to give your base in the village that Dorothy lands in. What counts is that Oz becomes your base of operations.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
And so you have to get to the end of one of the story arcs within your campaign and know that the rest of my campaign will circle this particular area, and then that's where it is. Or you give them a big old ship, and the ship becomes their base of operations. So wherever they go, wherever that action goes, they're taking it with you. As a GM, if you give them a mobile thing like a ship on the ocean or a ship in space, you need to make sure your action takes place where that ship and that base can be. Don't give them a sailing ship and then put your action at the top of a mountain in the center of a major continent. You could, however, put the action at the top of a mountain on an island, because then the ship's right there. They journey to the thing, do the thing, and get back to their ship and move on to the next island. You know, that's the way you got to do it.
Yeah. All right. So I am going to move on here because somehow with a 10, I wound up last in round two, which is the weirdest thing ever, but it is what it is. I am going to go a little nuts. Now, anybody that's listened to the show for any significant amount of time knows that sometimes I come up with the really wackadoodle crazy ideas. That's what I'm known for. I get it. I'm also admittedly going to go ahead and talk about the nuclear option. So with what I'm about to say, I'm going to assume that everything that we have already talked about, you've already done, right? You've talked to your players. Everyone's kind of had the discussion around the table where players are saying what they want. Storytellers are saying what they want. Everyone's coming to some sort of an agreement. There's an accord being formed about what sort of game we want to play. Maybe we've changed the theme because one or the other wants the theme to go ahead and change. We have tried throwing in some tools to go ahead and make the game more fun. We have tried all of these things, and maybe a player or some players or the storyteller, it's still not jiving. What do you do then? I'm going to have a part A and a part B to my answer here. New system, new game master. If we're really looking to preserve the table, preserve the player group, preserve the experience, when it's just not working, really change it up, really shift it up. Maybe if they all like playing 5e, there are plenty of games out there that run on the 5e engine. Start playing Everyday Heroes, maybe play Army Men, play We Can Be Heroes, like any number of things that run in 5e or 5e-like engines that you can go ahead and the mechanics would feel familiar, and it would let them go ahead and try a different theme, a different genre, a different experience at the table. Want to try something even more extreme? Try a totally different system. We're talking, there are all these 5e clones that are coming out now. Tales of the Valiant. We've got Daggerheart, which has a lot of Dungeons & Dragons elements, but isn't really Dungeons & Dragons. All these other things. Maybe go really extreme. Go with something super narrative, like Powered by the Apocalypse. Go totally off the rails. That's always in your back pocket. Say, you know what? This isn't working. At least for the next couple of sessions, we're going to play something different. Let's see if we find our love for the original campaign back when we try something different. It's like the extreme version of going on the 3-4 session side quest, Glenn, that you talked about in part one.
Absolutely.
But then also don't forget, too, that if the players and the storyteller are not happy with the experience, maybe there's a player in that group that wants to be the storyteller, and storyteller, don't tell me that you're not going to enjoy playing for a little bit. Shift it up. Let somebody else take the reins. Liwanika, we've done this with Alanis before, where Ben was running Alanis games. We run around Alanis games. There it is.
Liwanika run in the same Rifts world before too, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. So let somebody else put a different imprint on the world, on the game, on everything like that. Let them make some decisions. Give them some control. Everything like that. you will find that that's the core philosophy behind collaborative world building, is giving somebody else control over what's happening on the other side of the screen. And it works. It's really valuable. It can help inject life into a campaign that maybe needs it. So maybe a little bit of the nuclear option, but really something that, if nothing else is working, it is always an option.
I absolutely agree. And Alanis is a perfect example. And then Glenn's Palladium World is the next example. To speak on Alanis, then I'll let Glenn go, and then I'll come back with the rest of mine. But on Alanis, we weren't flagging, but there was a lot of players in Alanis. We were typically running a table somewhere in the 10 to 13 or 12 range on a regular basis. So we had one GM running that, and we always talked about it. There were always people in our gaming orbit, either at our LARPs or at other tables or in the various game shops that we hung out at, that always wanted to play. I was running other games, and everybody wanted to play in Alanis. And then there are just Alanis stories I wanted to tell. Ben couldn't tell those personal stories about the backstories and the side characters in the areas that my previous characters developed, because he had these 13 people to satisfy in his game. But I could. So I just ran those for other people. Sometimes Ben would join those tables. Sometimes other members of the group would join those tables. Sometimes we ran them concurrently. Sometimes somebody would just take over for a while in between Ben's campaigns. And I think that works really well.
All right, Glenn, what about your thoughts?
At the branching off and having somebody else run the game is a fantastic idea. Get a new person in the seat. Give the current storyteller's batteries a chance to recharge. The same game world thing, as we've already discussed, definitely does work. Marty and Lee Winika used to run the same world of Greyhawk. I think it was Greyhawk, if I recall.
It was.
As well. And like when Lee Winika and I did it with the Rifts game, we didn't run it at the same time. I finished my season, and then between seasons, he started a chapter on another part of the world, and we just kibitzed about how the overall bad guy organization would fit in. But when you're looking at either of these two more extreme options, whether it's new game, new storyteller, or the stepping away from the game and trying something new, saying, okay, this isn't something we want to salvage because it's not going in the direction we want to, those don't have to be permanent solutions. So we talk about them as though they may be, but that doesn't mean you have to just take this campaign and scrap it. If there's still something there that everybody was enjoying, you're just not able to resolve it all right now. You can play three or four sessions of something else and come back. It doesn't mean throwing all of your hard work away. It doesn't mean your world is over. You may have to change the tone a little bit of how you're running it, but you can always revisit and you can always come back as long as the players have interest too.
Yeah, totally correct. Totally right.
Absolutely.
All right, we are going to step away. We have a Patreon exclusive bit to go ahead and record for tonight's episode. So we're going to step away to go ahead and record that, but we will be right back in a few minutes. And remember, if you want to hear the Patreon exclusive content, don't forget that you can go check out www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Access to early episodes. Get the chance to go ahead and play at a table with the three of us and get in on all this Patreon exclusive content that we record. All right, we are back from our Patreon exclusive content. Just a reminder, if you want to go ahead and get access to the Patreon exclusive content, www.patreon.com/TTJourneys is the place to go. We love our Patreons. They help make the shows possible. The show would not be the show that it is without them, which is why we love inviting them to our table to go ahead and throw dice in a variety of settings. I know Glenn's been running a lot of Monster of the Week lately. We have Star Trek games, and there's maybe some talk about things coming, which we're not ready to release just yet. We have some ideas. Big things, as always, are brewing.
In addition to checking out our Patreon, make sure if you happen to be catching Tabletop Journeys on YouTube, be sure to hit the like button. Be sure to subscribe and be sure to smash the notification bell. Make sure you let us know that you want to hear more about what we do when we do it. Because when we talk about big things coming in the future, some of those big things are coming to YouTube as well. So make sure you check it out.
Anyway, that is our show for tonight. So let's see. The next few weeks here on the show are going to be pretty exciting, honestly. So we have got some, we have another list episode that's coming up next week talking about games that you should be trotting out for your new players. People have never role played before, brand new to role playing games, stuff like that. That'll be a really fun list to go through here. Very excited. After that, we have an interview coming up with Lynn Codega, who from TTRPG Rascal News, and you may recognize that name from, I don't know, the OGL kerfluffle that happened a couple of years ago. If that name sounds familiar, there's a reason why that name sounds familiar. And then, like we alluded to at the top of the show here, we have a couple game spotlights that are coming up here. One with an old friend of the show, back from when he came on to go ahead and talk about Lemuria. Alex Vignon is coming back to go ahead and talk about his big adventure game, and we're going to be running an actual play of that also. And then after that, we've got friend of the show, Jay Moore, is coming back to go ahead and bring us up to speed and up to date on what has happened in the world of Fae since the last time we played 2 years ago. So really excited to have both those cats coming back on to go ahead and run us through their latest and greatest there. All right, everybody, thank you very much for listening. Hope that you found this episode helpful. Hopefully you're not running a campaign that needs revitalization and that all of your 20s are natural and that everything's going great. But
sure, I'll take a dirty 20, but natural is better.
I mean, nope.
I'm going to let it go.
I think we're just going to let it go on that.
I'm going to let it go.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good night.
Good night, all.
Later.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Tabletop Journeys. We would love to hear your feedback on our show today. Join us at www.ttjourneys.com, where you can subscribe to the blog to leave comments and see all the content that we publish beyond the podcast.
You can also stay in touch by subscribing to our Twitter, Tumblr, or Instagram at TT Journeys, joining our Facebook group, Tabletop Journeys, or by sending an email directly to podcast@ttjourneys.com. Our full episodes come out every week on Friday, and every Tuesday features actual play and gameplay showcase episodes. Looking for early access? You can support the show and get episodes before everyone else at www.patreon.com/TTJourneys. Check it out today and see all the awesome benefits we bring to our supporters.
Lastly, if you're listening to us on Stitcher, iTunes, Podchaser, Spotify, or Audible, you would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast on that platform. Thank you for listening and for being a part of our growing community. And we bid you fair tides, friends, for legends await.